Today's talk, as you know well by now, that's probably why you came, is how do we reach those women in the ages of 20s and 30s in our churches, and then how do we bridge the gap in the generations to the older women to disciple and mentor them to maturity? Why? Well, why do we have a workshop on this? And certainly, most of the time in a conference like this, there is a mentoring type of workshop. But I do think you would say with me that this generation that's coming up in the 20s and 30s, probably primarily because of technology, it just seems to be huge difference between the baby boomers and this generation that I'm in. But although times are changing, the timeless truth of God's Word does not change. And one of those principles that has guided us throughout our lives is older women in the Scriptures are supposed to pour into this Titus 2 principle, the younger women. And that's found in the book of Titus. Titus was written by the Apostle Paul, and it's one of his pastoral epistles, which means that it's practical theology. And Paul is telling him how to lead and what the pastoral care of the early church is supposed to look like. In this Titus 2 principle, Paul is giving instructions, and I love this phrase, that it's the way that grace is going to ripple through the church and the Christian community when you connect like this, because it's teaching the church how to live out your faith in a world that doesn't know Christ in a way that he would be real. And while women's ministries may or may not be a term in your church, because some churches are just doing small groups now, but what we do know is that whatever your structure of your church, you have to have some sort of system to connect older women with younger women in the faith for the purpose of maturing them in Christ. And as we do this, part of this principle is that we have to have a balanced blend of sound doctrine in the context of Christ-centered relationships. If you get too far on the side of emphasizing the relationship too much, then what you end up doing is diminishing God's character and his glory. And if you get too far in this context, relationship on doctrine without the relationship, then you risk becoming, each of you maybe, prideful and arrogant, and you don't live out what you say you know. Let's read Titus 2, 3-5. It says, older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossip, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. Well, you certainly can unpack, maybe you already have in your life, the details of that passage. But you can quickly see that Paul is asking these women to learn to watch their tongue, to be self-controlled, to do good, to love their husbands and then their children, and to be productive in their daily lives as a wife. But the point again is that the behavior of the younger women, as they're taught by the older women in the church, it's through that that the Word of God gives credibility to a lost and dying world. So our churches are to play out this principle, aren't we? And it's going to usually take one of two forms. Either it's going to be a one-on-one relationship of some sort, mentoring, discipling, or it's going to be in a form of community, more so in a group, and it's going to be cross-generational. But by living out this principle, each of us is more well-rounded. And often in groups, and I love it when this happens, but there's more caught than taught as you hear the older women speak and the younger catch it. And it's more so than what you've done in your curriculum or your teacher up front can say. And I love that. But for our purposes in the workshop today, we're going to boil down our terminology to two phrases. First, this established generation. Those who are already in the church and established, settled in their lives. And those women, the more mature, one time I heard the phrase women in the afternoon of life. We're not going to keep that. It's the established generation. And then baby boomers primarily. And then the younger ones, we're going to call them the emerging generation. So we're trying to connect those two.
So really, as we talk about this topic, it's a no-brainer. We're women, we love relationships, we love knowing each other, and even more, we love to know women who are different from us, different ages, different stages of life. So that's what we're looking at today, but as we all know, there are obstacles to doing this. There are obstacles to bringing generations together. So I want to present to you the two main obstacles as we try to do this in the church. The first one is generational differences. It's just a simple fact that generations are different from one another. Every generation has a unique personality and a unique character which shapes their interests, what they're attracted to, how they relate with others. So when different generations have to work together or be in community together, there are often collisions because of these differences, and it causes misperceptions, poor communication, a lack of connection, a lack of understanding between generations. And unfortunately, that fact is the only one that we can't change. But the second obstacle we can change, the second one is how we respond to generational differences. And really, I want to explain two extreme responses that I think represent how we generally respond to these generational differences, especially in the church. And these responses keep the church from making progress in reaching out, especially to the younger generation. And the first response is over-exaggerating the differences between the generations. So this is when someone is constantly pointing out how different the generations are. You know, we're like this, you're like this. And when we do this, we will inevitably decide that one generation is right and the other one is wrong. One has a major problem while the other one has it all figured out. And when we do this, we begin to see the wrong generation as a threat. And so we act according to that. We begin to create, we do ministries that only represent the generation that we think is correct. We reach out to all generations in the same way. And when we do this, it elicits feelings of competition and division. So when we think about this in the church, what does it look like? Well, the wrong generation, whichever one, and this could apply to either generation here, the wrong generation is left feeling uncared for, unloved, ignored, like they're invisible and misunderstood and judged by others, which further creates those negative attitudes between the generations. And so what we do is we begin to form teams around ourselves that only represent that mindset in that generation. We begin to have lopsided ministries that don't effectively reach all generations. And eventually, that generation that's being left out will go and look for a ministry or a church that does care about them and that will listen to them and that does recognize that they need to be reached. So when I think about the church today, I think of two different churches. There's the church that is kind of the older generation church. And I don't mean that it's been around longer. I mean the majority of the congregation demographic is that established generation. And there, sometimes that congregation might think that they do church right and that the younger generation just doesn't understand what church is supposed to be. They don't understand what God meant for it to be. So we just need to keep going and they will eventually learn and submit and conform to the way that we do church. But on the other hand, what we're really seeing today is the opposite. Congregations that are dominated by that emerging generation. And they typically believe that the older generation has been doing church wrong and that that they need to just come and see how we're doing it better and we're doing it right and y'all are just kind of behind the times and you don't get it, you're not relevant, you're not up with the culture, you don't really get it. And so they do it their way and they kind of tell the established generation to either get on board or go find another church. So the second response we have, the first response is over-exaggerating differences. The second one is denying the differences that exist or ignoring the differences. So what this looks like is when we downplay the differences between different generations that people might point out. They try to point it out and we go, yeah, yeah, whatever, we're just doing church, doesn't matter. And churches continue to do things as they have always been doing them, or, and I see this a lot, they try new things, but they never take into account how different the generation is that they're trying to reach. So they just do ministry and new things for those people without even asking for their opinion or their input or what they would like. And in doing that, they completely ignore that it is a scientific fact that every generation is different from the one before and the one that follows it. So what does that look like in the church? I was on a committee in a meeting this past year when two women in the established generation were frustrated over this whole issue of trying to reach younger women. And when they were talking about it, they said, you know what, I meet with younger women all the time, and they're no different from me. We have the same exact interests. I was just like them when I was their age. I even have a lot of similarities. And so they were kind of, you know, harping on that. Like, we're not that different. They're not that different from us. They say they are, but they're not. But at the same time, they were voicing frustration over all the hard work they were putting into ministry to reach the younger generation, but they weren't coming. They weren't showing up. There's something wrong with them. So in one breath, they actually answered their own problem. If they're not going to recognize that the younger generation is different, that there are generational differences, then they're never going to go to that generation and ask them, what would you come to? What would work for you? Will you partner with us in this? And that's why in the end they were left frustrated, because they wouldn't acknowledge that there are differences between the generations. And really this leads us to the heart of the matter. In fields such as business, psychology, politics, they seek to understand generational differences in order to make a profit and in order to foresee what the future will hold for the success and the longevity of their corporations and businesses and for progress. But in the church, our goal is so much higher than that, and our goal is so much more important to that. We focus on generational differences in order to love one another better, in order to invite young women to come into the body of Christ and to come into our community, to tell young and older women about the gospel and to help them grow in their faith. So today, what's important to Carrie and I with our workshop is that you don't walk out with all of this cool knowledge about the emerging generation and you just tell everyone about it, but that you're actually listening to it in order to have a more effective and further reach in your city and in your through your ministry to the younger generation.
Well, now we're going to talk to you about defining these generations. What does it look like? And I can kind of tell by the makeup of the room that most of us are in this established generation. And you know that baby boomers were born between 1946 and 1964. And how many of you would be in that category? Do you mind? Okay, yeah, there's the majority. And part of that is because we're here on a Monday and you have the availability to come to the conference. So, baby boomers, though, we'll go quick on this. We have a great sense of accomplishment. Baby boomers changed every market that they entered, from the supermarket, the job market, to the stock market. The influential people to baby boomers are Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Rosa Parks, Richard Nixon, Beaver, and Wally Cleaver, the Osmond family, Gloria Steinem, Barbara Streisand, John Belushi, Janis Joplin, Captain Kangaroo, Captain Kirk, the Monkees, the Beatles, the Partridge Family, and the Stones. Places that were influential, Watergate, Hanoi Hilton, Chappaquiddick, Camp State, Woodstock, all kinds of sit-ins, and of course, Lafayette. And then things got bigger to baby boomers. Consumerism, bell bonds, mood rings, Rolex watches, junk food, and junk bonds. But the greatest invention of our childhood was what? The TV. In 1952. Key word for baby boomers is optimistic. Anything is possible. We started the ball rolling on self-discovery. We're a World War II generation before, like, well, you're not supposed to think about yourself, you just do it. We're competitive. By sheer numbers, this is the largest generation that's been born. They've had to fight for positions in college and in the workplace. And we know that that's influenced this generation a lot. They have a deep sense of beauty. These are often your most committed volunteers. You can count on them because of that. They have a high respect for structure, for rules, and authority. And this is really significant, and because most of our leadership is made up of this. We have like groups. They like to function as a group. Remember Vietnam protests, and maybe even now, I would say, the Tea Party from the economy. We function as a group. This generation loves seminars, going to big venues to learn things from one person. And that's probably why we have had in our past these large venues for Bible study with one teacher up front. And then the point is that when boomers who are in a church setting, leading the church, when they hear a problem in the church, our answer is most often, just do more teaching, let's get more events, and develop a program, and then we'll fix it. Boomer started individualism, and Ashley will tell you that her generation has taken it to another level. But regarding technology, as she mentioned in the introduction, we feel a little inadequate, and we certainly take that into our lives and ministry roles as well, a little intimidated in that. Okay, Ashley, tell us about your generation.
So as we define the emerging generation, and I want to tell you about this book. In 2006, a 30-something-year-old professor of psychology at San Diego State, who's from the Dallas area, Jean Twenge, a woman, came out with what is now the most accurate and well-researched book on the emerging generation. So this is the number one resource that I've used in what I'm about to share with you about our generation. As I read it, every single page, I was actually on a road trip with my husband, and I just sat there going, that's me, oh my gosh. And I was like, I thought this was my personality, but it's so much more about my generation and how I was raised when I was raised. Generation Me, it's on the back of your blue sheet. There's a box at the bottom with all of these resources. So the question is, who is the emerging generation? Who are we? You've probably heard titles such as Gen X, Gen Y, Millennials, Generation Me, iGen, and so on. But as Carrie said, I'm going to use emerging generation because I think that that word encapsulates the idea that a generation is so much more than the people in it. It represents the ideals and the culture and the trends that are coming to the forefront in our nation at that time through the upcoming generation. And in that, I want to define who I'm talking about. In Jean Twenge's book, she says that really the generation me, the characteristics of it can be seen from people in their late 30s all the way down to teenagers and children. And I think maybe in 10 or 20 years, we'll be able to divide it up a little bit better and see the differences. But of course, for our workshop today, we are just talking about women in their 20s and 30s. But what I do want to tell you is that what I have found is that the characteristics I'm about to tell you are found in stronger concentrations in the younger of this generation. So while I'm 32 and I completely relate with all of this, I will tell you that the 20-year-olds that I know are much more of this than I am. So Twenge makes a statement in her book to lay the foundation for understanding why we are the way that we are. She says, many studies find that when you were born has more influence on your personality than the family you were raised in. And whether you agree with that or not, I think that there's a lot of truth in that statement. So along those lines, in order to understand who we are, I want to paint a picture of how we were raised by our established generation, as Carrie said. It was a time when people were beginning to focus on self. Children were constantly being told that they were special and that they could do and be anything that they wanted. Follow your dreams and pursue happiness above all things. Be an individual and don't be held back by rules, expectations, tradition, or the way things have always been. Don't let anyone bring you down. It's wrong to criticize others. And if someone says something negative about you, then don't believe it. Don't hold back and don't hold anything in. Always be honest. It is good to express how you feel. We were taught that we must learn to love ourselves first before we can love other people. All people are equal, and to believe otherwise is small-minded and ignorant. We should tolerate and accept all people, no matter what their lives look like. So upon these ideals, our little personalities are shaped, and you can only imagine what we look like today as young adults. So what I'm going to do for you, I've got on your sheet five characteristics that define our generation pretty well, and I'm going to be so brief on this, so just know there's so much more to this that I could throw in there, but you could read it in here. So I'm going to give you these five characteristics and explain them. The first one is individualism. The established generation began the process of self-discovery, where at some point in your life you start discovering yourself and who you are and doing something for you. But for our generation, we've always been doing that. Life has always been about us. We have always done the self-analysis and all of that. And that's just who we are. We don't know life other than being focused on yourself. And so that's why we get bored when people talk about empowerment and introspection and self-analysis, because it's something we do every day. We are independent human beings, and we strive daily to be true to who we are and to express that clearly in how we live and what we do in our lives. And we take pride in the fact that we're independent. This is why we would never put duties before self, and why our generation might be seen as being a little non-committal, because first we have to focus on me. The second characteristic is entitlement. And this is probably the main description if you've listened to anyone speak about our generation or read books. This is kind of the description of our generation, entitlement. As I said, as children, we were told that we were special. We could do and be anything that we wanted to be. And truly, we believed it to a fault. We have high expectations and big dreams for what our futures will hold. And we rarely ever consider that we won't achieve what we're dreaming of. And often those dreams include making a difference and an impact in the world around us. But they also include getting a great education, landing fun careers, climbing the ladder quick, having a thriving dating life when you're single, and then getting married to the love of your life whenever you choose, making great incomes and owning lots of nice things, and basically to live a very happy and fulfilled life. That's what we expect with our futures. So anyone who tries to tell us that our dreams are unrealistic or too big or tries to hold us back or get in the way of that is just wrong. They're the bad guy. They just don't get it. The third characteristic is authenticity. We believe that there is no use in hiding behind masks or facades. Just be yourself, be honest, be real, be authentic. Don't ever hold in your feelings and your emotions. It is good to confess. It is good to air your dirty laundry. Don't hide in dark corners. Don't sit in shame. And don't be afraid of what others are going to think of you. It's better to talk about life because it might help you and it might help someone else around you. And along those lines, and you know this about our generation, there are no taboo topics, are there? Nothing is taboo in our generation. We'll talk about anything and everything. Directness is very important. If you have something to say, then just say it. Don't beat around the bush and just tell us what we need to hear. And this is why reality TV and reality books have become so prevalent today, because our generation loves hearing other stories and getting a little glimpse into the real lives of people. So the fourth characteristic is freedom. Our great sense of freedom is actually what allows us to do those three previous things. With our sense of freedom, we are able to express ourselves, be individuals, and dream big. We are free of a sense of obligation, conformity, societal standards, and rules. No longer do we conform to the majority, but instead, it's actually more admirable to be different. We see rules as being oppressive, unfair, and keeping us from exercising creativity and being who we were made to be. And along with the disrespect for rules, if you are a parent, then you know comes a disrespect for authority. There are no rules to our generation, and there's no authority because we are the authority. We decide what is right and what is wrong. We decide what we want to do and what we don't want to do. You can find a great example of this when you look at the romantic lives of our generation. There are truly no rules. You are free to do whatever you want. You can stay single. You can sleep around. You can be a virgin. You can get married. You can get divorced. You can live together. You can be gay. You can have kids. You cannot have kids. There is literally no standard for our generation anymore when it comes to that. And we honestly enjoy the freedom to be able to choose that. And one thing I want you ladies to know is every single one of the things I said is true for Christian women as well. The fifth thing, and I hate to have a negative word thrown in here. I tried hard all night to think of a more positive word, but couldn't think of one, is distrust. As a generation, we have lost trust in people, in God, in life, in society, in the world, in politics, you name it. We don't trust it. We doubt everything. We are cynics and we are skeptics. My best friend is staying with me this weekend. We joked last night about how even in the church, we are very skeptical of every single ministry that pops up. We immediately stop and go. Is there something wrong with it? Because we bet there is. We expect people to let us down. And we see much of life as being a result of chance and luck. When it comes to people, positions, titles, and degrees don't make them trustworthy and don't make them right. All we can truly do is rely on ourselves. So what we do is we test and we try everyone and everything to see if anything is worth putting our trust in. And because of this, our generation has moved away from things that are big. If something is too big, then you don't really know that you can trust the leader. You don't know that you can trust the structure, and you don't know that you can trust the people in it. So instead, we like things that are small, that are personal, that are grassroots movements, rather than something that's big and impersonal like corporate organizations. So when hearing about the differences between generations and what another generation is like, our temptation is to judge and criticize them and to immediately just start noting what must be wrong with these people if they're that way. While it is truly right, true, and obvious that the emerging generation has a lot of problems and is struggling in many ways, our purpose here today is to learn to respect other generations for who they are, because once we do that, then we can better reach them in those darker places in their lives. It is only when we do that that we will be able to speak truth into those issues and those struggles that the younger emerging generation is facing.
Thank you, Ashley. Well, let's move into talking about application in the church. Put some legs on that. But before we do that, one of our pastors used to use an illustration for four hybrids, so forget about that, and cars. But just as cars over time have had to change a model and how they are wired, but what doesn't change is the gasoline in the car. So we are not trying to suggest that you ever change the message in the scriptures, the truth of the gospel, that has to happen in the context of godly relationships. But what does change over time are the systems and the way that we shape those.
So really, this is the part that you've been waiting for. This is why you came to this workshop, is to learn what are young women looking for? What is it that we can do that will make our ministries attractive to the younger generation? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to offer you three principles instead of giving you a formula or structure and answer. I want you to hear these three principles and realize that without these underlying your ministry, you will not be able to reach the younger generation. And I have those on your sheet. The first one is relational, relational, relational. And what this means is that if a young woman attends an event and none of the older women talk to her, she will most likely, 99% chance, not ever come back. You get one chance. And if you don't show her that she's special and you aren't personal with her, then she's probably not going to come back. If an event at the church is sold as a big program with a speaker, something that's impersonal where you just fill a seat and then you walk out the door, then most likely your young women are not going to show up to that. Our generation has been dubbed as noncommittal in the church, but it's often a result of who we are as a generation combined with ministries not recognizing who we are and then meeting us where we are at in that. I had dinner a couple of weeks ago with six different young women between the ages of 22 and 26 in pairs. And with each two girls, I asked them at the end of our dinner, by the way, if the women in the church wanted to ever do anything for you, to reach out to you, something that you'd be attracted to, what would it be? What do you want to tell them? And without hesitation and without knowing what anyone else had said, every single one of them said relationships. I want to go to an event and be known by the older women in the church, and I want to know who they are. They're not interested in speakers or programs, but in knowing the older women in the church. So as I said before, for this generation, it's smaller, more personal gatherings. It's receiving a personal invitation, not a mass email and not a flyer in the mail. Because our generation has been taught that our faith is personal, we don't feel a need to be in a 200-person Bible study. We can do that on our own at home. But what we do have a need for is authentic, genuine relationships. So for you and your ministries and your church, the first thing you should focus on is providing community for the young women with their own peers. Make sure that there's a young women's Bible study or gathering or something to meet that need. But then the very next thing that you should be doing is creating some kind of intergenerational ministry that is focused on building relationships. One of the young women said it this way. She said, I want to know an older woman and be known by her, not just in a superficial way, but in a very real and personal way. The second aspect aspect that your ministry should have is authenticity and simplicity. And you can see that this is closely connected to our desire for relationships. When we talk to other women, we desire to see the real person, not the censored version of who they are. We want to know who they really are, because the truth is, that's reality. And we know that no one's perfect. We know everyone's always going through something, some kind of struggle, some kind of growth time in their life. And we want to know that, because that's what we need to grow and to be encouraged. We want to deal with real life issues such as sex, alcohol, depression, homosexuality, divorce, adultery, and so on, because those are the things that we're facing in our lives. And in my ministry with young women, I assume with every single one of those young women that I spend time with, I go into it assuming they're facing at least one of those things, if not several. And as I do that, it helps me to be more sensitive, to ask probing questions, to not just gloss over my time with them as if everything's just happy and fine. Because usually if a younger woman is spending time with an older woman, she actually has something on her heart she wants to talk about. She needs help getting through a hard time in her life. And so when I come into it acknowledging that, I open doors for them so that they can bring up those things with me. And then I can actually speak truth to them that speaks exactly to where they're at and what they're struggling with. Along those same lines is simplicity. We just like things that are simple and direct. We don't like cheese and frill and girly things. We just really want to come and get something out of it. We want a straightforward and genuine message. We want it to be direct and applicable to our lives. So when we hear a message from a speaker, we honestly don't care if they're any good. We don't anymore. We don't care if they're trained. We don't care if they walk around the stage or, you know, tell funny stories or show videos. We want substance. So whatever comes out of the teacher's mouth needs to be something that I can take in my hands, in my heart, and in my head, walk out the door with, and apply to my life, and apply to making the world a better place and serving others. So the last one, the last aspect, is threefold. Vision, purpose, and leadership. For the first one, the emerging generation has great energy and passion, and hopefully you've seen that in the young adults that you know. We want to be a part of creating a vision, not just having a vision cast on us and given a task and told what to do, but we want to be there in the think tank, thinking and creating together. We want to give input, dream up the structure, and help carry it out. You should see the young adults in your ministry and your church as a source of ministry ideas, not just as this group that you're trying to figure out how to minister to. Young adults can be a great asset to the church when you do this. Secondly, we also want to be a part of something that is making a difference, that has a purpose that we can believe in. Gone are the days of big mass worship services and things that just focus on self. We have church, and we'll do it then, and we'll do it in our quiet times, but when we come together with people in the church, we want to serve a greater purpose. We want to do something that's bigger than that. We want to serve. We want to help. We want to be a part of a great purpose, to love other people. And then the last part of this, the third thing, is that it's important to have balanced leadership in your ministries. And this is probably the most applicable thing that you can walk out the door with today and start implementing on your way home on the phone. The purpose of the ministry age test that we gave you when you walked in is to help you do this, to help you have a balanced ministry team. It helps you to understand how everyone thinks, and then to make sure that you represent all the different styles of thinking and leadership that are in your church. So what does this mean for the church? It means if you want younger women at your events, at your Bible study, at your retreat, whatever it is that you're doing, then you must have young women on your leadership team. You must. It's a non-negotiable. And along with that, when they share, what they have to share needs to be valued and needs to be implemented. They need to be a part of that and carrying it out. So a huge part of that is to be willing to do things differently than they've been done before, not to answer with, we tried that 10 years ago, it didn't work. But to say, great idea, why don't you do this? Why don't you spearhead it and build a team around you? I'm going to make it possible and give you the resources and open the doors that you need to make this happen. So with all of these aspects, I guess what I want to say is that If you want to have an effective ministry reaching young women, then you need to make sure that all three of these things are in your ministry, or else the young women will eventually find a ministry in a church that does have these things and go there.
Thank you, Ashley. Well, we're going to connect in with this younger generation. And this is what I would say to them from a baby boomer established generation woman. First, pray. We know that this is God's will. And when you pray in God's will, then He will say yes. And so pray and watch for that woman that you are either supposed to pour into or to have pour into you. Second, younger women, show interest in the older women in getting to know them. They may look busy, but if you want, invite them to coffee, and they will make time for you. Godly women know that this is part of obedience to Christ, that they pour into the younger generation. And if you stop and say, "I don't want to meet with you," then they will. And showing interest helps that. And then next, seek out ways to connect with the established generation in your church of women's ministries. Find ways to tell them what your generation really wants and what they need to be ministered to. Tell them your ideas and what you would like to learn. But know this, that it isn't because we don't want you on our leadership team. Sometimes it's just because of time. Empty nesters, women who have maybe only have one child or one, especially if there's one child still left at home, they often have the most time to lead other ministries as opposed to younger women who are working and have a lot to do. You see, you're shaking your head, but that's what makes it so challenging is time. And it does become more of a challenge. It's not that we don't want to include you. And last, be respectful of authority and be willing to commit what you do have to offer. Respecting authority is biblical. We are supposed to follow the authority that God has over us. And when you commit what you have to offer, then ministry works even better for all of us. Angela Grisham in our church is a young 20-something, and she has a full-time, very busy job at Baylor down the street here. But she is part of an organization that she may be the youngest in the whole group. It's called Counseling for Life. And she has said, "I can contribute my technology skill, but that's it." And they adore her, and she makes a vital contribution. But she's committed, but within the context of what she has time for and what she can offer. So, how do we do this? How do we implement in our church? It's kind of confusing and challenging, isn't it? Well, we wanted to tell you a little bit about our church and then what some other churches are doing, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers. How's that sound?
Now, I think we probably just have enough time to do PCPC.
You want to do that? Okay.
Tiffany's in here. The session's at 2. Oh, we're great.
We're good.
Okay. So we wanted to share with you how we've been doing this because that's what we know the most about. And then we have a couple other examples that I think embody what we've been teaching to help you to understand what that looks like. So the first thing that we want to tell you about is the Young Women's Ministries and the Bridge that we started about 4 years ago at PCPC. And really all it was I had been at PCPC for years, and I would go to women's retreats and no one would talk to me. And I, like Carrie said, am a very aggressive, outgoing person. And so for my personality to be coming to women's things and walking away feeling almost more depressed and lonely than when I went is a really sad thing and a big challenge for the church to learn to overcome. So when I came on staff at PCPC, it was like a door had been opened where I could actually make a difference and do something. And I remember the day Carrie and I were walking down the street, and I had been thinking and talking to my friends about this, and just real timidly just said, "Well, Carrie, I really think that our women's ministries could do a better job of reaching out to young women and being intentional to do that." And I said, "I've got some ideas of maybe what y'all could do." And so she just smiles and goes, "Great, do it." I was like, "Okay, really? Okay, I'll do it." And so what she did is she invited me onto the women's ministries team, our leadership team, to be the voice of the young women and to help all of the women see who the young women in the church are and talk about that. And then I started a young women's Bible study. And like I said, that's the first need that y'all need to focus on reaching.
Wait a second. I'll never forget this before, is that you spent a summer really praying about it. You got your age group, your age group together, women, and y'all prayed before you did anything.
Yeah, probably my best friend, another girlfriend, were all single in our 20s, late 20s, and we really prayed about it and talked about it, discussed it, what would
for
it look like?
At least a couple of months.
Yeah, for a while. And then it was actually on one of my little silent retreats when God gave us the name and the structure and everything. And so when it was time to start, we started with a young women's Bible study. And all it is we are teaching the truth, and then we break up into small groups and give them that time with their peers. And it's hard to meet both of those needs in one Bible study, but we do our best to try to do that as we can. And then the second thing that we did is the bridge, and that's probably really what y'all need to hear is how we connected the different generations. And basically, all of the bridges is we do it every 7 weeks at the church, so it's not very often, so people aren't fearful of committing and having another thing on their calendar. It actually turns into like a fun party that's on your schedule that you look forward to going to. We host it in people's homes, and we have dinner catered in, and everyone who comes pays for dinner. And sometimes, just depending on how well we're able to divide the food, it might be $5 a head, $8 a head, $10 a head. And then if women, we tell young women if we notice they're not eating, hey, you know, if you don't have money, don't worry about it. Come on in. And go ahead and let them eat. So what we do, probably the most important part, is I partner with a woman in the established generation. And at the beginning of the bridge, she and I stand up together around everyone just casually standing together in the room where the food is. And we kind of tell some jokes and make sure everyone knows it's casual, non-intimidating. And then we give them a commission and a call and a command, I like to say, that you are here for the next 2 hours to intentionally get to know someone of a different age and stage. That is why you are here, so you have to do it. don't say it that mean, though. But anyway, so we tell them, okay, so now that you know this, what you need to do is find someone of a different age and stage that you don't know, and then get in the food line together. Go through the buffet. Go sit somewhere in the backyard, in the house, wherever, maybe with two other couples, so like 4 to 6 people in your group, and intentionally spend time together asking each other questions, getting to know each other, digging into each other's hearts and souls, and looking to connect and build relationships. So that's the first hour of the night. And then the second hour, we all come into a room together. We sit on the floor. We squish in, sit in chairs. We lean on the walls. Whatever we can do to get everyone in the room. And in the beginning of doing the bridge, we probably had about 20 that would come. And now we have up to 60 that come. So it gets a little challenging to find a house with one big room for that. But we move furniture around to make it happen and bring in folding chairs and stuff. And so we have asked a woman in the established generation to sit before us and share with us her story. And that's really probably people's favorite part of the bridge, is that we get to hear from a woman who looks perfect, who looks like she has it all together. She got her husband and her kids and her big house and her nice car and her cute clothes. But she sits in front of us and she tells us that she is no different from us, that she has faced the same struggles as us, and most of them even worse. And so they open up their hearts and their lives to us. And I can't even tell you how it just breaks down the walls between the women in our church and between the younger and older women to make it just more accessible to the younger women.
Thank you, Ashley. So you can see that what we're talking about is that respectful listening. Tell me what you're about. What are you up to? Based on the generational differences. But once you get past those differences, there you get to the same heart issues that we have all had, and the gospel speaks to all of them in that way. And so that is how the things come about. Now, some other things that we have found is the Village Church. Where else? We read Park Community Church Chicago. Some of them are listed in Leadership Journal. This is a wonderful magazine that if you get a chance to order it, it's in the back of your test as well. This issue speaks to and has a lot of good ideas of reaching this iGen generation or the emerging generation that we've been talking about. But the two things that came up over and over again are intentional listening to the younger generation, and then implementing as you can and being willing to shift and change your structures. And the other thing that we heard a lot is speaking the principle. Matt Chandler, Denton Bible, it's like the principle from the pulpit on down is this mentoring, discipling. You need to be pouring your life into another. How are you to watch for it, pray for it, do it. And that it's not a program, it's a principle
but there's lots of avenues for it to happen organically, and those are the kind of structures that you'll find that are creative. It seems to me that those the Titus II structure will match up people one-on-one and then maintain it. You don't see that working much anymore, that it needs to be a little bit looser but still intentional, and that's where the creativity comes in.
We would love to hear from y'all about things that your church is trying, things that you've tried. Even if it hasn't worked, we'd love to learn from your mistakes or your strong efforts. But what have y'all tried? I know Simone's in the back. I'd love for you to say a word about just those little forums where you began the process of listening to the young.
And she's at Light Point in Rockwall.
We had some forums in the very beginning because when I went to Light Point 2.5 years ago, we had the forum, and we had our and so I had some forums of women, and I have women under 40 on one side of the room, women under 40 on the other side of the room, really with the intention of them just in each campus. And all of our campuses are quite different. I mean, everything from a Catholic church to sort of a more balanced type mentality. So we have all and everything in between. But basically, for them to get to know one another. And one of the big aha moments at our newest campus, our Fargo campus, came in the spring. I had told Ashley about this when we first met, and I think that's what you're referring to, where I said, nobody on the 40 and up side can say anything for the first 20 minutes.
We like that.
They like to hear themselves talk, but they're important. They started in about 2 sentences in, the 40 and overs were trying to defend themselves and things back. So we stopped that, and we let them talk. Each side got to say some things. And on the older side, they kept saying, the younger ones kept saying, we want to get to know you, we want to be involved with you, we want you to mentor us, we want to have a relationship with you. And so finally, one of the older ladies said, but you never come to our things. And one of the younger ones said, that's just it, they're your things. And then connect. And we don't do that. We connect, and then we'll come. And that's
huge. Did y'all hear what she said? The connect and then.
That's the younger generation. Well, the younger generation says, you want us to come and then connect, which is what my generation, the older generation, most of us in here will do. We'll go to something and then get to make friends. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do that. They want to have a relationship with you. And I have found it's been huge since I talked to you, actually, about bringing our young women in, because I intentionally have relationships with a lot of young women, which Ashley knows. And so I have asked them specifically, when you head up our leaders, when you head up this, and when you ask them, they feel so honored, and they get their friends involved, so they get they come. But since I've talked with you, we also have a mom study, which is very much the Titus II mentor model here. Mm-hmm. Because what we have is 20 mentoring moms, and they sit at round tables for Bible study. It's more about mentoring than it is about Bible study. It's very what we call Bible study light, to get young women in the community who have never come to the church, come to a Bible study there, because all the applications are going to be mothering.
Talking out light. Thanks, Simone.
That's wonderful.
What else have y'all done or seen that works?
Or questions you have?
I just have one question that this will probably come out. When you were listing all the things of the virgin generation and the entitlement element, what is the reality of life?
Good question.
You know, that's the part that I wanted to talk about in this, but we obviously had enough material. I feel like that's a whole other workshop. I think it really hits in pretty quickly. And if y'all have heard, our generation has taken a new phrase, quarter-life crisis. And I went through it.
Depression.
I went through it at age 24, 25, where you realize life isn't what you thought it was going to be and that your expectations were not realistic. So I would say early 20s, really early 20s, is when it hits you. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people in business who say, you know, men and women come into corporations expecting raises and promotions immediately, you know, so when it doesn't happen and when you don't find that Prince Charming is exactly when you want to, things like that. Yes,
Corey?
I just want to kind of go off this, like, our church is like 99% young moms, like, everybody's like 33 and
what church do you mind? What church?
We're Chapel Bible Church.
Okay.
We are a daughter church of Christ Chapel.
Oh, I see.
And so we're about 5 years old. Are you going to have to tell your story?
Yeah.
So we have a really young demographic, and we have a really small contingent. That's one more thing. How do we get people over 40 to come to our church? We should block the campus. But the young mom, that's a big one. What does it look like to be a young mom from the emerging generation? You know, because I think a lot of models we have in our heads of motherhood or like what it looks like to be a mom come from the other generation.
I think in the same way, it's just learning what their lives are like and not assuming they're the same as they were 20 years ago. You know, most of my friends are going to continue working when they have children. So recognizing that their life looked different in that way, that they're going to raise children and continue working. And I think Harry's learned that it's offering them first what they need, the parenting skills.
Yeah, and Simone mentioned that too, that the women who are mentoring, our women's Bible study that focuses on young moms, what the mentors tell me is that you still have the issues that, I don't care what age and stage you are, do you get along with your in-laws? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do I discipline my children? That's probably coming up more. In fact, we're going to meet about this tomorrow as we kind of put our heads and hearts together with the mentors of that study, because there's so much of a fear in discipline now because of CPS and maybe even the man on TV, what do I do? I don't know what to do. But you're going to have an older woman show you how to live life well in a godly way. Everybody does. And I think that, the big differences I hope you're catching are at the beginning. Can I trust you? Can I know you? I want to hear you. I want to know you. But the heart issue of being in good relationship with your family, disciplining your children, loving your husband, those are the same throughout all time.
Mm-hmm. So would you say, because in the church I grew up in, it was program-oriented and topic-oriented. Our church is not topic-like. It's a Bible church and, everything, community, you say that those topic-oriented things still appeal to the younger generation?
I mean, that's what's happening with our group of moms today, that the older leaders in the mom study started hearing this issue with discipline, and they on their own are having something Wednesday night, and it's casual at someone's home. Anybody want to have a focus on discipline discussion, come to my house. And so it becomes more topical in an organic way.
Can I say something real quick? And I would say be careful not to look for the structure, formula, program, too, in all of this, because you're going to have moms in different places in life, and you're going to have some that will only come because it's a topic that they need to learn about, and then you're teaching them biblical principles through that. But there are other moms who are very strong in their faith who are looking for solid biblical teaching. So why not have two groups, one that's reaching that first group of moms and one that's reaching the other?
Those are our challenges. I don't know if we're going to do that yet, but
yeah, we're actually facing that right now.
Yeah, Simone.
One of the things I was going to say about ours is one kid at the end of every semester, for Bible study, we have taken seven girls at random from the study to lunch, and we let them talk to us, and they actually help determine what we'll teach on the next semester. And they talk about these topics. Mm-hmm. And then take that and bring the principles from Scripture, and that's what we make the study about. So they come into the study because of that, what you said, actually. Some will come only to learn about the one topic they want. But we have it all written before, but we write it and we write it around what they're asking for. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be these topics.
Any other questions on any of it?
Am I hearing you say that you, as far as formal Bible study, you do peer groups? Like your younger women just speak with the younger women just for Bible study, and not just discipleship.
Here about our ministry structure.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what she and Ashley, we went round and round on this. Remember that? Because I thought that you should immediately try to put women in a cross generational issue.
That's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
It's really been a little frustrating.
Yeah.
But what
that's a huge problem. Why are the young women now, not just the young women that grew up in our church?
Because when you're in your 20s, you got to have some friends. You know, you're going to want to.
When you're working, you don't have time.
And so if you can, that's exactly right. So if you can get that settled first, and then as they get out of that introductory level of Scripture and study, and maybe they're married and start having kids, then you can be in it. Because I do think ideally to mix up generations is the best, that more caught than taught. But Julie Pierce at Urban Bible told me that their structure in the way that they put their small groups together when women sign up for Bible study is they used to do about from 20s to 50s. And now they just do 20s and 30s
and 40s and 50s because it was so much mm-hmm. of a group. I thought that was interesting and a good thing too.
And if a woman's sitting in a small group and she doesn't relate with anybody in her group, she's going to feel even more isolated and alone in what she's going through. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of it is these young women are single. And I mean, I have both single and married, but the majority are single and they don't want to be single. And they're lonely and it's hard. And so to be able to hear someone else is lonely and struggling, it just kind of makes you feel better about where you're at.
Yeah. But Ashley ended up getting women who are single and not yet with children. It seems like once they have babies and the interest changed so much, then you need to be
truly
in another
always
structure
laughing
at that
babe.
Point.
My Bible study is the one before kids.
Yeah, it kind of is. But that's just what's been how we've done it. The married singles.
They actually
yeah.
married people.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Courtney's been wiping her hands.
The challenge for us, I'm at a church in Houston that's about 6 years old, and we are also a very young church, and so my challenge has been to engage and empower kind of the modern generation, like with some of the established one, and so. I reached out and I wrote a letter to all the women 40 and older, and I just said, we need you, you know, these are the ways that we need you, and all these, and, you know, and I said, because the problem is, so many of them were, I mean, our main area for discipleship is going to be happening in Bible study, but they were in CBS, they were in BSF,
that's a good point.
You know, all that, I was like, do you realize how much we need you? But this is what they said, they came to me because they're in the established direction, they're like, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Like, this is hilarious. I want you to rub up against these younger women. And, you know, but it was a challenge, but I still run up in this kind of like deer in the headlights kind of thing, like what do you want us to do? And so how do I...
Well, I mean, but tell you what they might be struggling with is a lack of confidence.
Oh, totally.
You know, so what I do is another frame of life. I need something to kind of give me some confidence to get in there. So that could be part of it. Also, I know there's a woman, Ann Halter, at So Dear, who's at Watermark, and she had been in BSF for years and felt God calling her to a church that didn't have a lot of established generation and for that very purpose. And so CBS, and I mean, this is my bias, no, I think it's true. CBS and Bible Study Fellowship are good preparations, but I think we should pour back into the church to build disciples. That's what God created for. So we might have to say that a little bit more bluntly. But if you what can you do to encourage that older generation? Because also very many of them are in a sandwich generation, and that they're so full with their parents and their children and beginning grandchildren.